Hello and welcome to the Blues Guitar Show podcast with me, Ben Martin, from thebluesguitarshow.com. Hope everyone's having a great week. This week today I've got a great episode lined up. I'm talking with El Nico, who is the frontman of the X-Ray Cat Trio and runs the Death Ray Cat YouTube channel. He's a rockabilly player, a surf player, he's a Gretsch-endorsed artist, a super humble guy, really nice dude. We had a great chat, I enjoyed it a lot. Cheers to El Nico for coming on, and you're welcome anytime. Enjoy my episode with El Nico.
All right, we're on. So you've opened beer and I've got a cup of tea.
Yeah, I mean, I say that. I've done the thing where it actually hasn't opened. So that's quite sad.
You just failed there, didn't you?
I did. And this could be the start of one of those Beatles about videos. Yeah, never mind. Maybe I wasn't supposed to have a beer tonight. Yeah, anyway.
Well, it's great to have you on, man. I really appreciate you giving me some of your time.
Not at all.
You just got back from Spain, right?
That's right. Yeah. We just played a festival called Rockin' Race Jamboree, which is like what it sounds like a sort of rockabilly festival, 3 days, 4 days, I think. And they're like a bit of country, bit of hillbilly, blues, rhythm and blues, that sort of thing.
Reverend Horton Heat was there, right?
He was, yeah. One of my faves, actually. Didn't get to see him, though, because I was... it's my own fault. It starts early. It finishes early. I started early. I got tired. I got headaches. Had to go lie down. Getting too old for it. So I didn't get to see him that time, but I have seen him before. So I'll catch him next time. That's my excuse.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got his guitar, right? The signature one.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, So that's kind of my oldest, like, main workhorse. I've had that since 2008, I think. But it's the best guitar I've ever owned. Really, the neck plays really nice on it. Pickups are great for like.
Are they the stock pickups you've got in it?
So yeah, they're the TV Jones classics, but they work really nicely for everything between the rockabilly stuff, and then when you crank it a little bit, it also works nicely for the rock stuff as well. But yeah, so that's my main one. But I've recently moved on to my White Falcon, which was kind of like the dream guitar. I'm still getting used to it. It's a slightly longer scale length.
Right.
But it's beautiful. It's ridiculous and shiny and spangly.
Nice. Yeah, I watched the video of Haunted Man.
Oh, cool.
That one, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think it might be on the P90. I put a TV Jones T90 in the neck as well. But I'm kind of trying to balance the volumes on them. Which right. is kind of, yeah, it's one of them. There's going to have to be a bit of jiggery-pokery going on.
How good are you with, like, setting up guitar stuff, like changing pickups and that?
So changing them, I can do. My soldering's probably not the best. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy, like, taking the afternoon to do it. But, yeah, it's particularly difficult with these guys because, like, you can't just take off a back plate and then you're into the guitar. You've literally got to like unscrew everything. And then I got like bits of tubing to go over the parts. And then you kind of feed it all through and it's a whole operation. It takes a while. The first time was quite nerve wracking, but then, get into it. Swapping pickups is okay. As long as like the work's been done, I'm putting two wires where they obviously go. Whereas if I was going to like do one from scratch, I don't think I'm not really there for that just yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I enjoy it.
I imagine it's really stressful. I mean, I'm useless with that kind of thing.
Right.
I'm one of those guys that I don't even have a toolbox. It's terrible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And
my ass is kind of taped together. Like,
yeah. Well, like setting them up, it's kind of stressful as well. If you got to do any truss rod adjustments, the first time I did that, that was pretty scary. because you hear horror stories about if you tighten it too much, like, oh, it's going to come through the neck or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get a little bit of like smug satisfaction every time I do something and it works. And then if it doesn't, then I'll run to my mate who's a guitar tech and he'll fix it for me, hopefully.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Nice, man. But yeah, so obviously I'm a fan of your band. I love your stuff.
Like, thank you.
X-Ray Cat Trio, I was just jamming on that.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And it made me think, actually, watching that video, your picking hand is so fluid. You're like, at the beginning of that, you're going...
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get onto the, like, YouTube stuff that you do, but, like, do you think about that a lot when you're teaching and stuff?
Do I think about the right hand when I'm teaching? Yeah. I guess I think when I'm doing the videos, I'm more concerned with the left hand because people always want to know the tabs, don't they? They're like, where do I put my fingers? But then when it comes down to it, yeah, it's really important, your right hand, isn't it? And things like rhythm and then doing other things with the left hand as well, like muting and stuff. That's something that's really a handy skill. Is being able to mute so that you can keep your right hand going like the motor, and then it's like that funky style, isn't it? You can mute when you don't want to play, but your right hand's still going. So I've had a couple of lessons where that's come up, actually. The muting thing.
Because I think sometimes you think, I had a guy that I was teaching, and we were kind of going through some of that stuff, and I couldn't really understand why he couldn't just do it.
Like, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's like a da 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's kind of going, hang on, what? It's like a down,
yeah.
Down, up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you kind of think you just kind of have that. I don't know how you, I don't, you know, it's we, difficult to teach in a lot of work.
Yeah, we take it for granted because I imagine, I don't know how long you've been playing, but I imagine it's a lot of years, right? Mm. So, that's kind of innate in us, and some people just have that natural rhythm and they don't have to think about it. But otherwise, you really do. And it's always, yeah, the up down thing. When am I going up? When am I going down? And most of the time I try and sort of think of it like the right hand is always going up and down. And then when you figuring out if you're going up or down, you don't really have to think about it because that's just a little motor and it keeps going. But then it's easier said than done, isn't it? It's something that comes with practice, I bet.
Yeah, and it's something I found, I think, when I started teaching, is that it makes you kind of break apart your own playing. Because like you just said, I'm exactly the same. I go up and down all the time. And it's actually about when I strike the string.
Yeah.
My hands always going up and down. It's about when I'm hitting. And it's kind of taking apart your own playing at quite a fundamental level and then being like, yeah, oh, that's what I do.
Yeah. Cause yeah, if somebody like hones in on something like that and yeah, we know what we're doing, it's automatic, but then it makes you step back and disassemble it. And that can take a little bit of thinking about, can't it? It's like if you try and play a fast piece really slow, sometimes that can be harder as well.
Yeah,
but that's one of the good things about teaching is it keeps us on our toes. I think it's sort of definitely for me. Since doing more teaching over the last couple of years, I've definitely got a lot stronger in my playing. My theory's getting stronger as well, and yeah, just enjoying learning. And then people asking me questions, sending me down like routes I might not have gone down before, but yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, I heard the interview you did with Adrian White, which is really cool. I've been trying to get Adrian on the podcast, but that time difference is just an absolute bastard.
Yeah, it was a struggle. I think I managed to get him. I think it was like 10 p.m. my time, and I think it was like 9 a.m. sort of his time. But yeah, he's brilliant. He's
a great player. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good player and dead good sport and sort of, cause when I started doing what I was doing, it was kind of similar to his world, and rather than be kind of standoffish or, you know, rival feelings. He was just totally, from the start, really kind of welcoming and generous with his time, and we decided to do collabs and stuff. So, yeah, he's a top guy.
It's definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
Are you a Gretsch artist? Am I right in thinking you're one of the Gretsch guys, right?
I did get very lucky, and I got one of those thumbs up in Dorsey things a few years back.
I think you're the fourth Gretsch guy I've had on in the last year. I'm starting to think Gretsch is sponsored the podcast.
That would be nice.
Like you, I had Paul Baguette on a little while back.
Oh, wow.
Evans and like everybody's
Gretsch. Oh, you've had Russ as well. Oh, cool.
Actually, I'm going to go see Russ this weekend. He's doing his birthday show thing over in Bristol, so I've got to go and
awesome.
Take a drive over to there.
I've never met him face to face, but I've seen like what he does and stuff. And I think we were booked to play a gig when I was playing in a band and we were supporting him or something, or I can't remember, but it didn't happen in the end. So I never got to meet him. And Paul Picat, yeah, he's really good. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, he was really cool, man. He was, he was just talking to me from his iPhone.
Oh, right.
From his guitar workshop.
Wow.
See, yeah, he was great.
Is he building guitars now or something?
That's pretty much. Yeah, he said, I don't know about new Cousin Harley stuff, but he's maybe doing a new acoustic album. You know, he does the Boxcar albums. And yeah, he's just doing a lot of building.
Right. That's excellent. Yeah.
Spends all day in a workshop, listening to music, building guitars.
Yeah. That's, I guess some people are, I'm one of them, like maybe not playing as many gigs ever since obviously COVID happened. That's changed a lot of people's, you know, what they do with their time. So I wonder if that sort of started that off.
Yeah, it could well be. How does it kind of work for you split wise? Because obviously for people listening, if they don't know, you've got a pretty big YouTube channel. And between that and you play in the X-Ray Cat Trio, but you also have a surf band. Like, how does it all kind of piece together? I'm just interrupting this episode to let you know about the Blues Guitar Show Plus membership. Plus members get access to weekly lessons each Friday, complete with tabs and downloads. For just $5 a month, you'll get instant access to nearly a year's worth of guitar lessons covering finger picking, fretboard theory, soloing, improvising, slide, and much, much more. If you're tired of bouncing around on YouTube trying to pick up bits of information from here and from there, and you find it hard to commit to regular lessons, this is for you. Details of how to join are in the description below. Now back to the episode.
Well, so yeah, I reckon obviously the turning point being COVID. Before that, I just over the last couple of years before that started being full-time musician. So like scraping by from tours, doing, you know, even busking and doing whatever I could. But I think I was also doing like a few days in a record shop, a few shifts on a bar. But it was mostly the gigging that I was mainly doing. And then COVID happened. And then that's when I started the video channel because I couldn't do anything else. We did a few live streams like once a week. We know a guy with a bar is a good friend of ours. He let us go in there and do live streams from that, from there. So that was towards the end of it. So basically I just started it as something to do during COVID, did a few videos that did quite well. And then I just grew it and grew it and eventually was able to stop doing my day jobs. And then when the world was open again, I was able to do more gigs. I don't know if it was COVID. I don't know if I'm getting old or tired or whatever. I kind of like being at home now. I love playing gigs, but, you know, maybe not as much as I used to. So the balance now is I try and like stick out a video a week on YouTube. I've got my Patreon and I try and get people to join that. And it varies. Sometimes I don't have time, like last weekend, obviously being away in Spain. But luckily I can just do it at my own pace, which is which is cool. So I'm like, I can sort of take on the, as many gigs as I want to. If there's an especially exciting one that I want to do, then I can take that rather than having to say yes to everything. So it's a nice balance, actually.
Yeah, that's cool, man. How did you get the show in Spain? How did that come about?
So I was in another band called Hal and Rick and the Rocketeers, which is more like a traditional rhythm and blues sort of band. Mm. I was just playing guitar in that. And it's kind of all like incestuous. Our drummer is Hal and Rick, who fronts his own band. So like everyone's in each other's bands. And I think the guy booking the festival saw his other band was my band and was like, let's get you on as well. And then I think it was a bit of like a package deal for him. So, cause he'd get the flights, but he gets two bands for the price of one sort of thing.
Okay, cool.
So we pretty much piggybacked off that probably. And I think he liked the music too, as well, of course. So that was it really. I've done a fair bit abroad, but mostly it's been like driving to like Germany, Netherlands, Belgium, stuff like that. Sort of DIY tours, really.
Touring.
Yeah, yeah. So it was nice to be flown out somewhere. Yeah, there's a guy when you get there at the airport with a little sheet of paper with your band name on it, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. This is nice. Get looked after.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was a kind of rockabilly weekend. I went to one of those last year. Have you ever been to the Welsh one? I think it's just called the Welsh Rockabilly Fair, maybe.
I haven't, no.
It's in this town called Porthcawl, right?
Oh, okay.
Really weird place. they were great guys, and they had me, and I went and did a podcast with a bunch of people out there. But I turned up in this town and I was walking around and I was like, there's a lot of Elvis shit. Like,
yeah.
And I even walked past a church and they had a little crucifix with an Elvis in. And I was like, this is getting weird. Every shot. Yeah. And then it turns out this town is like the most Elvis obsessed town in the world.
Right.
And they do an Elvis festival every year, which is the week after the Rockabilly Weekender.
Right.
They do an Elvis festival. And apparently the Elvis festival gets more visitors a year than like Graceland does.
What?
Wow. So the whole place just goes nuts. Everybody's dressed like Elvis. There's shit everywhere. It's a cool place.
That is funny. It's funny though, that link between Elvis and Elvis on the cross and all that. He is like a god to people, and he's got that following. It's quite amazing.
Quite amazing. He's kept it up like this long after he's died. You know.
Yeah, it's like that old thing that rock and roll will never die. And in every town you go to, there's a guy with the roll up jeans and the quiff and the jacket, like. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be a thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then once a year, they all go to Wales.
Yeah. Where are you based, by the way?
I'm just outside London.
Okay.
I saw the Black Cat Boppers there. Those guys.
Yeah, I've played a gig with them actually. Yeah, down in that was a Hal and Rick gig. That was down at Magic Garden pub somewhere. I don't know. That was in London. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Cool, man. Mm. So I've got a bunch of questions to ask you, but,
okay.
So, obviously like your YouTube channel, I think I'm a big fan of it. And actually one of the cool things about it is I've discovered loads of new music through it.
Brilliant.
Like, the Itchy Bonds.
Yeah.
Before, great band. Barents, Whitfield and the Savages. That was a recent one you did. The Barrage Rock thing. That was awesome. How do you kind of choose? Like, is it just music you feel like teaching or?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad that you said that, because one of the things that I like to do, I want to teach guitar, but also I know loads of bands that are really fucking. Excuse me, I just swore. I don't know if I can do that. You can bleep it out if you want. I know loads of bands that are really good that people might not know of just through being a music fan or playing at gigs or seeing bands tour that not many people go to. And it's like, I don't know, I don't know, I get excited about these bands that aren't as well known. So it's really cool when people might see one of these videos and go, oh, I found this band through learning a tune. I think that's really cool. But how do I choose them? Yeah, it's like, if I really like it, if it's like a catchy tune, and how is it? Like, I don't want everything to be easy that I put on the channel, but I do think a lot of people that watch it and a lot of people searching for videos are at like a beginner to intermediate stage.
Sure. Yeah.
So like, and when I'm teaching someone who's really new to guitar, I like to be able to go, right, fingers here, fingers there, hit that a few times. There you go. You've got a riff. It sounds cool without too much work. Mm. So if there's something that's like quite attainable but sounds good straight away, then my ears will prick up and be like, oh, that'll make a good lesson. Like the Barents one, that's pretty tricky, really. In theory, it's quite simple. It's just power chords, but you got to move them around fast. You might have to have a bit of stamina on your left hand, but it's like, you can always try it anyway and play it a little slower. But yeah, that's how I pick them. If I like them and I think it'll translate. Also, because a lot of the time I'll sort of tab stuff out or do a backing track. Can I do that fairly quickly? Mm. So that helps as well.
Yeah. When you were kind of learning and stuff, did you start off playing this kind of music or did you kind of go through different genres?
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
I'm trying to think what the first thing I learned was. I think the first thing I...
It was probably this.
Yeah. To be fair.
It just switched off.
That was definitely on the list. And I think my dad had a guitar, but I was too shy to ask to play it. So I had to creep and find it and just like... just play the strings and get used to the sounds and stuff. And I had some pals who showed me like a few riffs. I think there was like Metallica, AC/DC stuff on two strings, power chords. But yeah, my dad was into his rockabilly and all sorts. It's always been that in that rock side of things. Then punk, I got into my like punk rock and stuff, but yeah.
I mean, I think you hear that in your music, that there's that kind of,
yeah, cool,
you know, it's kind of rockabilly mixed with the Clash, mixed with some surf stuff, and
yeah,
it's cool
mix. Nice, yeah. One, yeah. You just play what you like, don't you? It's I don't know.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
What was your what was the kind of first band you played in?
My first ever band will have been like a school type thing where we played covers. So it will have been like Green Day, Nirvana, Jimi Hendrix, although that sounds impressive. We would have had a stab at it. Power chords. Yeah. We were quite lucky in our school. We had a few people who could play instruments and they let us play during the assemblies. Like I remember the first time I did that and it was interesting. I had a change of who I was in the school. I was like, oh, it's the guy that plays guitar. Mm. Cause I learned quite fast to be at a reasonable level. And then I kind of plateaued for a bit. So I think everyone does that. I'm trying to like claw my way. I'm always trying to improve. I think it's important, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think everyone's got to feel like that. But I mean, yeah. I mean, I think you're a master, man.
Oh, it's very kind.
How did you approach, like, when you started seriously playing? Were you one of the guys that like sat and did practice? Did you just play loads of shows with writing that you were more into? How did that kind of go for you?
Yeah, I think all of that. So when I was younger, my first guitar lessons were in classical, because I come from quite a small town, and I don't think we knew an electric guitar teacher, but my dad knew this classical guitar teacher. So he showed me things like how to hold a guitar and things about like technique that I might not have picked up. So that was really good. And he kind of taught me how to practice as well. You know, you play it slowly, you play it softly, you play it harder. And I don't know, that really stuck with me. So I figured that kind of taught me how to be patient, which is difficult, and not everybody gets that. And I think you need to be reminded, if you're learning an instrument, to like be kind to yourself, take your time, and you're gonna make mistakes, but just keep at it. Things like metronome as well, which is kind of, a lot of people hate it, but I like it. I use it as a tool to kind of get better. But then I think later on I got more interested in like writing stuff. Yeah. So I think like my first band, when I moved to Leeds, I was playing with a guy who was writing songs, but he didn't play any music, any instruments. Sorry. Sometimes when I talk a lot, I forget to breathe. So I'm just going to have a little second. Getting overexcited.
It'd be the first death on the podcast.
yeah, it's important to breathe. When you're practicing as well, like, take it slow, be calm. Yeah. Anyway, as I say, yeah, so this guy, he'd write lyrics, and I would have to fit music to his lyrics. And it was really fun. And we got a set's worth of music done, and we did a few gigs, we released an album and stuff. But that practice of having to, to sculpt a song out of some words, that taught me a lot as well. And how do you write a song? Like, how long do you want an intro for? What's the chorus? What makes a good chorus? And like, I really like a catchy chorus. But then you don't want it to be too catchy or cheesy, and it's like that fine balance. So that in itself I find really interesting. And I do like writing music. So that's a skill in itself.
How do you write music? Do you sit with a guitar and like play and sing, or are you recording it and trying to work out different parts?
Yeah, yes to all of that. So sometimes I'll be like walking home from somewhere, and like I'll get a tune in my head or a lyric, and I'll write it down on the phone or something. Sometimes I'll just have the tune in my head and I'll play it out, and then maybe I'll record it on something and try and loop it, and then I'll figure out what chords fit behind it. Sometimes I might do it piece by piece. I've got a verse, and then I'll do it in a really kind of blocky way with GarageBand. I've started using now. I never used to do that, but I might sort of put it to some MIDI drums, and then you can like drag and drop it where you want it and do it that way, which is a bit more like almost like an electronic kind of way of doing it. All the different ways is good.
How much do you think about music theory when you're writing? Do you like not think about it at all, or is it a factor for you?
So I don't think I used to think about it very much. because I know there's certain like chords that go together, like chords in a scale or whatever, they might go together. I'm only just starting to understand this stuff. But before that, I knew that maybe, right, that chord goes well with that chord and that chord. And it's trial and error. It's like the fact that a lot of pop and rock tunes, they share the same chord progressions anyway. Obviously, there's theoretical reasons for that, but I'm still getting to grips with why that is. And I remember someone saying, like, the whole theory thing of music, it's a way to describe, a way to label things, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, you might understand more theory than you think you do. You just might not know the correct terminology.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Mm. It's just, I mean, a lot of the time it's like, we know that this works.
Yeah.
And that's hundreds of songs, whether or not you know that as like the 1-5-4 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's just what you're calling it, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, you can go down these rabbit holes, and like that 1-5-4, that numbering system. Mm-hmm. I feel like I only kind of figured that out a few years ago. But yeah, and then every time I learn something new like that, I feel this little eureka moment, and it's like, oh, that's interesting. And you can just go down these rabbit holes forever. If I'm ever curious about something, I'll type it into YouTube, and there's normally a helpful chap explaining a little something. But it's a lot. It's a massive subject, isn't it?
And it is. I think sometimes it's one of those things where, you know, they say like if you like start learning a martial art, it's like you can learn enough to get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Right.
I kind of feel like I had a feeling like that, because I when I was playing in bands and stuff years ago, I don't think I ever thought about music theory. I mean, I vaguely knew what does and doesn't work, and I would just play, you know, solos or whatever. And then when I started learning it, I felt like I started overthinking everything I was doing. So then when I was improvising, I'd be like, oh, hang on, I need to be in this scale and this shape. And it's like this block that I never had before. Huh. And then you kind of push past it, and then I feel like now I'm past it. But I would love to see, like, I mean, there won't be footage because I feel old, but I'd love to see footage of what it looked like, what I was playing when I was just playing whatever. Anything, you know, it's kind of weird.
But then when you're playing without that sort of restriction almost, then your fingers just go to places, and you might hit a weird note that's not in a scale, a diatonic scale. Exactly. And you're like, oh, that sounds cool.
And now I feel like I'm trying to go backwards and find that note.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool, you know? So, yeah. But like, how much do I think about theory now when I'm learning a song, obviously for teaching purposes, and for myself, I always try and think like, right, what key is this riff in? What notes are coming? Is that a third? Is that a fifth? Just out of interest, because like I'm kind of having to like retroactively apply this knowledge on the stuff that I knew, and just you just see that everything's connected, and it's just it is pretty cool. I forgot what my point was. Music's cool.
How do you obviously you do a lot of private teaching, like I do. How do you tackle the teaching the fretboard thing? Because that comes up so much for me.
Yeah. Well, the first thing people normally say to me is like, I know like one scale. I don't know if I'm going to use this. I just picked it up anyway. Oh, that's too loud. Sorry about that. They'll be like, yeah, I know like the minor pentatonic, but I'm stuck here like forever and I don't know. So then for that, if they want to play more pentatonic stuff, I'll show them the other positions. So first of all, but the fretboard knowledge, like trying to know what notes you're playing, is obviously important. So like one of the tricks I'd go for is like if we're doing A minor pentatonic, I'll just sort of pick out the octaves. So there's an A there, there's an A there, there's an A there. So that straight away there you've got like a handy little pattern, this little triangle. And then you can find the other ones and, you know, go on all day long. So that's kind of... Oh, and also, you know, when you're tuning relatively on your guitar... Oh, not very well, apparently. like, I've got an A there, I've got an A there. And all these little patterns to connect things together, like... I find that was quite helpful. And then what you can do on top of that is, like, if you've got a little riff that starts in A, like, try and find that on all your other A's. Whoa. Yeah. And then when you've shown someone that and they've not thought about it, there's normally a bit of an eye-opening moment. But yeah, fretboard knowledge. And apart from that, there's loads of little cheeky rhymes, like the mnemonics. Often you got your 12th fret there where everything's doubled up.
Yeah, do you know that happened to me a couple of days ago? I was teaching a lesson to the guy that I've been teaching for a couple of years, on and off. And I just said something flippantly. Oh, and of course you can also do that above 12. And he was like, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Oh, well, the 12th fret all starts again." He was like, "What?"
Yeah.
Sometimes, again, it's like stuff you take for granted.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then it's kind of, that's one of those light bulb moments where it's like, oh, now I'm like, there's so much I can do. Like just with stuff that I know, like, you know, all the simple little licks that you know down here.
Yeah.
You can just do straight up there. And it's like, you know, total copy and paste job.
Yeah. It's like an instant, elevation in your solo, isn't it? Right. And yeah, it's like a little cheat code or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It happened to me. Well, I took a lesson with a guy called Daniel Donato. Do you know that guy?
No.
He's a Nashville Telecaster shredder. And he's absolutely amazing. And I caught him playing in when I went to Nashville a few years ago. And he just blew my mind. I was following him and I saw that he was doing lessons, and they were like pretty well, you know, quite expensive for me. It's like, I thought, I think I should do this because he can do all this like up and down the neck stuff, and I just couldn't understand it. And he kind of gave me a right kick up the butt, really, and got me understanding a lot better the fretboard. This was only a few years ago. I should go back to him actually and get a few more, I think, because it really, like, it was the best thing I did that year. It just, like, it really blew me away how good it was. So I think it's important to always learn stuff. What was my point about him? Oh yeah, I think he was. We were talking about where root notes were and stuff, and it was so obvious. I think I was just having a bit of a brain fart, but it's like, right, the fifth fret on the E there, that's an A. And I was playing that note there and I couldn't figure out what it was. And it's like, it's obvious, it's an A. It's an A. It's like,
yeah,
like, of course, yeah. You've got that top E and low E, they're the same, which is super obvious. But on that particular day, I wasn't thinking.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. But yeah. Little patterns, and when you find new stuff, it is just it's like a eureka moment, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's cool because then you start wanting to throw it into everything you're playing. Like I was working on a bunch of country guitar over the last kind of year, and just the double stops, like the, you know, you know, you suddenly for every chord, you know,
yeah,
these cool kind of fun runs to play, and that's just the triads, really. But it's just a double stop version of it.
Well, I was that's one that got me. It took me a while to get my head around as well, because it's like I think I was doing them as the root and the major third, just those two notes, and then the minor. So then you got it in that scale. But then the country guys, they'll do the what do they call it, the Mixolydian version. I can't remember exactly, but and also the fact that it's like an inverted major third. All that stuff.
If you do the minor to major,
yeah,
that one, just sliding from that minor third to the major third, which is just there. And instead of going up that, you're going up to that one.
Nice.
Little things like that. And recently, I discovered just doing that across two octaves. You can just go.
Oh, nice.
Do a lead part. But awesome. Finding little things like that is so much fun.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely cool to take lessons with people. I keep thinking about seeing if I can sign up to Paul Begat's got like a is it like a Patreon or something he does where he does lessons. I keep thinking I should learn from that guy because he's ridiculous.
So I remember learning, I think he had a video, I can't remember if it was a tutorial video, but it was like doing a 12 bar. I can't remember exactly, but it was like he's doing a 12 bar, but instead of going from like a G to a C, it was going from G to C, but he was playing the shape of like it's like he's playing a G
a triad version
minor, but I don't know, it's relative to the something or other. I don't get it, but it made me realize, oh, I can do that shape, I can do that minor, those minor notes there instead of the three chord. I don't know. I'm very rusty with my theory.
Sounds cool.
Ace.
Yeah. He used to do a lot of the tutorial like DVDs, I think, when I was younger.
I think that's where I found him, was just looking for lessons online. Him and Setzer, he did a few talking through his tunes as well. And he's a big guy for techniques and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, both of those guys played just crazy fast.
Yeah, yeah.
How much learning of that stuff did you do? So
the Setzer, the Stray Cats thing, I used to really listen to them quite a lot, and I would work out quite a few of their songs and solos as much as I could. But as soon as he starts getting really jazzy, I start to get a little bit lost. Or if it's really fast runs, then I'm not quite there yet. But I can't think of an example now. But things like techniques and when you just sleepwalk. Playing it completely wrong, but that sort of string raking across a few strings at a time.
Oh, how hard are you holding that down when you do that? Like, how hard are you holding the chord down?
Yeah, that's staying down there, and then instead of strumming one string at a time, I'm hitting about two or three. I'm just taking a chord and it gives it almost a bit of a delay slapback sound without any of that. Things like that.
That brings us beautifully onto your pedal setup and stuff. What's your gigging rig look like?
So my pedals are all over the place at the minute. In fact, I tell you what, this is quite interesting to us. this is literally the bag that I brought back from Spain. so I can show you what I took. We are on the plane, you're limited to what, 10 kilograms or something?
Yeah.
We had a seat for the guitar. And then, so I'm like, right, I need some pedals. I brought my lightest tuner here. So you got to have a tuner, obviously. That's some cheap Chinese thing, which also you can use as a looper, which is handy for practicing your face melting solos. Okay, and then most important for me is this guy. That's an RE20 Space Echo.
Oh, nice. So
it's the Boss version of what was like a big actual tape big thing. It's got a really nice preamp in it as well. Because I tried to use a smaller one that was lighter for the plane, but it kind of made everything sound a bit muddy and horrible. So this, I'm used to it. Just a quick slap back on it. So I needed that. Then my next favorite effect, that's a slap back, by the way. That's like that did it, that real fast one. Tremolo is another one of my faves. So like anything from like a bit of a bow diddly kind of thing, or generally when I'm doing like a slower tune, I might like a bit of tremolo on there. Love that, especially with baritone. And then finally, this guy, which is a Tube Screamer clone I got. Oh, nice. So slapback, Tube Screamer, tremolo. Mm-hmm. That's it. I had a backup overdrive thing, which I didn't use. I was going straight into a Fender Twin.
Oh,
and
cool.
It just sounded great.
Yeah, they're great amps.
I'm having a problem at the minute of getting the exact right breakup tone. Mm. So like the stuff I do, it sounds nice when it's breaking up, just breaking up, but like not too much like punk or metal. And it's just finding the right balance.
That's one of the hardest things to do though, isn't it? Cause you want that. You want to be able to like dig in and get some crunch.
Yeah.
Totally clean here, but you also want to be able to have that kind of like, but like you say, stick some tremolo on and have a...
Yeah. You want to hear the notes.
It's a slower trim.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to just be able to move between those, don't you? And it's
yeah. Really yeah. And then all the amps are different, and then different rooms, you're going to have different settings. It's a constant battle, that.
And the band setup is you... upright bass and just drums, right?
Yeah,
but a lot of space to fill, like sonically.
Yeah, so a lot of my favorite bands are three pieces. I don't know why, but yeah, you play differently when you're the only guitarist. And what do you do? Do you play like with another guitarist, or?
So I dep in a band where I'm one of two.
Yeah,
but I do a lot of solo gigs just.
Brilliant.
It's amazing. You play completely differently. Like, you play stuff because, you know, if it's just me playing acoustic, I can't do like a, you know, that would be weird. Like, you end up playing completely different stuff. I do a lot more finger picking and stuff when I'm playing acoustic.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's it. And I don't know, I'm kind of used to only being the only guitarist in the band, although with the surf thing, I've been doing gigs with another guy and then another guy on acoustic as well. So that's making me sort of step back a bit and like, oh, cool. I can just shake some maracas for a bit or something. But yeah, for some reason, I think a lot of the rockabilly kind of bands that I liked, they were three piece, and it's like, yeah, something cool about that. But yeah, there's pros and cons to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's and it's normally that setup that the guitarist is singing as well, isn't it? And
basically
backing up.
Yeah.
That's cool. Mm. So I saw some pictures on your website of you guys playing shows in just the craziest looking outfits.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah.
Talk about that.
I imagine that will be from the Halloween gigs that we do. So yeah, basically the bar I mentioned that I used to work in, I used to put on a Halloween gig every year. And yeah, so I don't know, what have we had? We've had, the last one was a medieval theme one. So I was a knight. I think Adam, the bassist, came in as a jester. We did a prehistoric theme one. I got one of those. That's probably the best one, actually. I got one of those. Yeah, the blow up dinosaur suit. And, we came onto the Jurassic Park music, you know, I couldn't see a thing. I can never see a thing with these things, but that's part of the fun. And then I think we had some like cave girl go-go dancers. That one was the best one, I think. And then we did like an alien one where I painted myself all in gray. I had like a gray alien head on, couldn't see a thing. But the photos are always cool. But yeah.
There's a photo of you playing with a completely naked chick in front of you too.
Oh yeah, that'll be, we see this sort of music we play, it goes hand in hand with that burlesque world. So yeah, that will be from a burlesque night where trying to keep my eyes on the job. Trying to play the right notes while there's somebody getting undressed in front of me. But yeah, we've done some really cool stuff, actually. Done some interesting stuff.
There's a lot of cool places to play in Leeds. I used to go out there quite a lot. We'd do the odd tour and we'd go and do the like the O2 Academy up there, but also the Cockpit. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Still there?
No, the Cockpit isn't there anymore, but the people that run it, they do nights in various other places. I think they're involved with that Slam Dunk. I think I've got that right. I don't know, but there's loads of music venues in Leeds. My favourite's the Brudenell Social Club. Do you know that one?
No, I don't.
So it's like an old working men's club, but it's been done up and it's got a really nice sound system and they've just built an extra room on it and they get a lot of touring bands going there. It's like a nice sort of medium-sized venue, but yeah, that's kind of like one of those places we love playing.
Yeah, do you do a lot of the like most of your shows local?
So, like, we've got one on Friday with the Surf Vehicle. There's a band called the Schizophonics playing, and they're this. I don't know where they're from. They're American. I don't know where in America. The singer kind of reminds me of. Like, you know, MC5 sort of early punk. But he's throwing himself around on stage. He's got like a strat and he plays it amazingly and just throws it around and does all these crazy dance moves. And it's like, yeah, MC5 or some kind of garage punk stuff. Just a drummer and a bass player. So we're supporting them this Friday. So occasionally we'll get a nice gig like that.
That's
at the Brudenell.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be cool. Haven't made any records yet, so I'm just going to sell some T-shirts.
That's with the surf band, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something I'm working on. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think I saw a video of you, you guys playing. That's the X-ray... Surf something, right?
Yeah, X-ray surf vehicle,
that's it. Cool. Yeah I watched one of the videos. Yeah That's cool. That's the Hungarian Wake. That was the theme.
Yeah, that's it, which is pretty much a Dick Dale style thing.
How do you find writing instrumental music versus writing music with lyrics?
Oh, I find it loads easier. Yeah, lyrics I find really difficult, because I always end up cringing myself out or like thinking too deeply about it. But then when you're writing riffs or tunes, it's like, I like that. That's cool. It's not like I get more self-conscious about lyrics and singing as well. I just think when you're playing, I don't know, there's none of that. So
yeah.
I find it a lot easier.
Well, it's a lot less sort of personal, isn't it, when you're...
Yeah, that's it.
Just exposed.
Mm.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody a couple of days ago, a podcast interview from last week, and he's a Nashville recording guy, and we were talking about how when like he started doing his own music, the difference when you're playing somebody else's music versus when you're playing your own, like when you're playing somebody else's music, it's like, I didn't write it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's funny that, yeah.
But yeah, when it's yours, it's just different, isn't it?
Totally.
Too.
It's totally true, actually, because like, yeah, when you're singing someone else's tune, yeah, it's not your problem. It's not your inner soul you're exposing. And also it's like, oh, that's a real song that's been done by someone else. Like that's okay. But whereas when you've done it yourself, it's like, I don't know, you might get that, what's it called? Imposter syndrome. Like, yeah. I'm just a dude. Like, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. I've just shoved some words together. And yeah, I think you got to be really quite confident and sort of strong-willed to do it. Well, that's why I prefer instrumental stuff anyway. It's easier.
Yeah, because your full-length album had quite a lot of instrumental stuff on it, didn't it?
Yeah, we always do, yeah. I get sick of the sound of my own voice, to be honest. It's probably not the best quality in a singer. But I see myself more as a guitarist and then people like songs, so I'll have a go. Yeah.
It's cool though. I think that happens a lot in the genre. Like Raz, who we were talking about earlier, he released a whole album of instrumental stuff.
Nice.
And it's great. You know, I think in that genre of music, it's not always necessary to have vocals.
Yeah, definitely. And like, if you can get a bunch of nice sounds, you know, get your tremolo on the go, and there's so many nice noises you can make with guitars, isn't there? So, and other stuff. You don't necessarily need it. But yeah, I think when we do record the Surf Vehicle stuff, there will be like some backing oohs and ahs and, you know, just to add to the, I'm seeing it as more of like a, you know, like an abstract painting, and like you throw stuff on it and it's going to have textures and that sort of thing.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess is the opposite of like, I watched the sessions, stuff you recorded. Where was he? You did like a live session with X-Ray Catcher.
Yeah, live at home. Yeah, in fact, I'm just going to go over here and do the hard sell.
Yeah, do it.
My label guy, Carl, will be pleased with me for this. You can still buy that, I think. Live at home. It's got like six tracks on it. So there was a couple of... There was one instrumental on that and then two covers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty like...
That's Live at Home, H-O-H-M, right?
That's right, yeah. And the covers are kind of obscure. One's by Flat Duo Jets, who are like this two-piece rock and roll band from somewhere in America. And the other one was My Mistake, which is by the King Bees, which is another quite not very well-known American rocking band. So
nice.
Yeah.
Is that a picture of your Gretsch on the back?
Yeah, on the back we've got the Gretsch, and that's the Fender reverb tank, which is one of my secret weapons.
Nice. Yeah, I mean the tone on that album is wicked, man. It sounded great.
Nice one. Yeah, the guy Russ recording it is an old pal, and he knows what we like and he knows what he's doing.
That's all recorded live, right? No overdubs, no nothing. It's just you guys playing.
All fully live, that, yeah. So there's some mistakes in there, but it's okay.
That's the best
way. Yeah, not too many.
How did the Gretsch thing come about?
Why? How did I start liking it? Or
no, how did the kind of like Gretsch endorsement thing come about?
I got lucky, and also I pestered some pals. So like my friend, there's a band called the Zipheads. I don't know if you know them, like a psychobilly band. But they're more to them than just psychobilly. They kind of got this, I don't know. He's a really good songwriter, Ray is. And he also he got the endorsement, and I just basically slid into his DMs and was like, how'd you do that then? Then he introduced his friend Jamie, who knew the big man at Gretsch, basically. And they were both, everyone was just dead helpful. And there was a bit of prodding going on. And I sent loads of records and pictures of me playing my guitar. And it's like, I've been playing this guitar for years. I love the guitars. How about it? Sort of thing. And he was super nice. He's now retired, Joe, the top guy, the marketing dude. But he was super lovely and sort of rang me in the van when I was driving back from a gig. Ad or the band in the back. And I was like, it's like a Wayne's World moment, you know, where Mr. Big comes and gives you the phone. It felt pretty, pretty smug. he was dead lovely. And that's it, really.
You play anything else? You just play Gretsch's, or like, do you?
Oh, yeah, I play everything. Not everything. I love tellies. I've got like a Frankenstein telly thing. I've got this old K thing, which that's like a 1960s catalog guitar thing. I mean, if I could, I'd have one of all the different kind of guitars. I like Jaguars. I like SGs. I've not played everything yet, really, but I just love guitars, really.
So your dream guitar, is it the White Falcon?
That's it, yeah. And I've got it now, so what am I going to do? I'm going to probably find something else that I want. Maybe I'm going to go down an amp rabbit hole. So I'm looking at Fender Champs and stuff now.
It takes up more space.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, actually, because what I use is way too heavy, and I could do with something a little bit easier on my old man back.
That's great, man. So what have you got coming up on the gigging front, on the YouTube front, anything in the kind of pipeline?
So gig-wise, I've got this Friday. I don't know when this will be out, but...
a couple of weeks.
Yeah, in that case, I can't think off the top of my head. We're playing up in Newcastle with the Surf Vehicle. We're going to be picking up some more gigs and finishing this recording. What else did you ask me?
and on the YouTube.
YouTube-wise, there's going to be some more lessons. Because I haven't got as many gigs coming up in the foreseeable, hopefully it'll be a bit more active. Like I say, I like to try and do one a week. And I do enjoy like finding something a bit obscure that people don't know, because it's easy to kind of go down the route of, oh, everyone's going to click on this Brian Setzer thing, or I like to balance it with something not as well known. So maybe I'll do a bit of that. I might go back to these rockabilly cards. There's a few I have not done on there. Also I like to look at the requests, and if someone comes up with a cool request, that I'll go with that.
So these
they're just sat there because I'm supposed to be using this. They're called String Stars, right? My friend did the art for them, and he gave me a pack, and I just thought, wouldn't it be cool if I just like shuffle them up, and then, right, oh, I got Ray Charles, so I'm going to do a lesson on Ray Charles now. So I've done a little series of that. And there's a few I've not done yet. Like, they're all like Dwayne Eddy, Bo Diddley, Screaming Jay, Roy Orbison, like classic rockers, you know. Yeah, so I might go back to that, because that was good inspiration. Well, then the other day, Sister Rosetta Tharpe came up.
Yeah.
And she's amazing, but I'd need to properly sit down and work some stuff out, because it's not easy.
Yeah, she's got that crazy kind of...
Yeah, very
kind of train rhythm thing going on.
Yeah, very kind of loose and fluid way of playing, and it's not going to be like a 20-minute job. That's a proper sit down and do it properly. Because I'd always try and find like an easy one that I can do fairly quickly. But sometimes it's worth taking a bit more time.
Yeah, they take a long time to make those videos, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a quick thing.
No, especially when you add in the tabs and, but also just speaking to a camera is, you know, I'll make loads of mistakes. I'll say too much, and that adds to the editing. But there you go. I like this though, because you saw the thing I did with Adrian, the chat. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind doing a bit more of that. Maybe you'd like to come on my channel and do a little chat. Yeah. That'd be cool. But
let's do it.
Yeah, that would be cool, man. Because I've got lots to ask you.
Nice, man. That's great stuff. We better wrap it up around here, but I really appreciate you coming on. And I'm a big fan of all the stuff you do. I'm going to try and catch you guys at some point. So when you're coming anywhere near London or the South, you've got to let me know.
I will be. Yeah, our label guy's based in Hastings, so I don't know if that's your way at all.
It's between me and the sea. Yeah.
Yeah. But normally we try and do a London on the way down. So maybe we could do that. Yeah. It's been really nice to meet you.
Sounds good, man. Well, cheers for coming on. I really appreciate it. And anybody listening, check out Death Ray Cat on YouTube and the X-Ray Cat Trio. And you'll find all the stuff over on your website, xraycattrio.com.
Are you fully fretboard confident? Do you know where the notes are, how they connect, and how they move up and down the strings? My latest book, The Triad Method, is all about using simple three-note shapes to completely unlock the fretboard. This book is absolutely full of light bulb moments that are going to demystify the neck three notes at a time. I've compiled a huge number of diagrams, shapes, and exercises based on over 10 years of teaching this stuff to make it as simple as possible. Download The Triad Method and see for yourself today. Link is in the description below.